It's the 180 queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Glad you're with us alongside Chad Withrow in Mount Juliet, Paul Koharski in Brentwood. I'm Jonathan Hutton in Murfreesboro. David Reed is the chairman of the board, making the show happen for us in Nashville. And we say hello to a great friend of the show, Dan Orlovsky of ESPN, and now of ESPN's NFL Live, the announcement coming up and coming down this week. Dan, first off, great to hear from you, and congratulations.
Good afternoon, guys. Thank you, man. You know, obviously a very exciting and great people that I'll be working with and going to do our best, and we're confident it'll become the best, you know, really football show on television. So we'll have a ton of fun doing it. Great to be with you guys for a little bit today, and thank you again.
Is this, in fact, your last appearance with us, because you will now be so big time and ESPN won't let you visit with us?
Yeah, I mean, guys, I'm in a cloth seat F-150 eating a to-go protein bar with no shirt on as I just mulched my own grass. So I don't think I'll ever become, like, big time. So I look forward to more times hopping on your guys' show.
A man who mows his own grass is a man that you can trust, and that man is Dan Orlovsky.
Exactly.
Dan, let's hit it here. Let's start with some quarterback play, and let's start with Ryan Tannehill coming off of the season where you had the tweet recently, maybe about a month ago, where you made mention that Tannehill was the most efficient quarterback in the fourth quarter in one possession games and potentially, you know, game tying situations. What did you take from Ryan's first season here in Nashville, where he started from week seven on, and where do you set the bar now for him now in year two with Arthur Smith's offense?
Yeah, I mean, to have that consistent play throughout the season, you know, I would say the thing that happened for him as a quarterback, other than the success and whatnot, was, you know, it seemed like he got his confidence back, got his belief in his own game back. And that is such a very difficult thing to do, and it's a difficult thing to kind of put your finger on and quantify and all that stuff. But, you know, you're looking at a guy that some people doubted, very few people believed in, and all of a sudden has the success he had last year. You know, you want that confidence. You know, that's the standard now has been set. The bar has been raised for the confidence level. And then the way you remain as hungry as you were to prove people wrong last year, you know, it's funny because a lot of times quarterbacks can go through a point where in their mind they go, I've got nothing to lose. You know, like, I'm just going to go out here, I'm playing with house money, and I've got nothing to lose, and I can just go be really aggressive with the football. And you can have stretches of success in that because you know what's the worst that can happen. Are they going to cut me? And so you play almost at a level where you go, man, I wish I would do this when it was on the line, when I am playing for something that, you know, maybe isn't as freeing as nothing to lose. And so I want to see, and I'm confident that he will, that Tannehill will go through that now that he's the guy, the money has been paid, and the expectations are very high.
So, Dan, when you look at Ryan Tannehill and his comeback story with all the injuries to different body parts, and then you look at Cam Newton and the injuries that he's been dealing with, most recently the Liz Frank injury, and you saw the resurgence of Tannehill's career in a new system with a new offensive coordinator last year with the Titans, what do you think about Cam Newton, who is a year younger than Ryan Tannehill, possibly seeing some of that same success now as he tries to revive his career with the Patriots?
Yeah, I think the big thing to realize is that Tannehill was put in an offense scheme-wise that really fit what he wanted to do. The second thing to realize is that the people were around him were very good. You know, the offensive line for Tennessee was strong. Obviously, a dominant run game, and then those skill players on the outside were good. And so I say that all the time about quarterbacks. Nowadays, it's much more a big deal of who is around you and what you're doing with them. And so when I look at Cam in New England, I finally go, all right, scheme-wise, at least the foundational aspect of Josh McDaniels is I could be whatever I want to be as a coach. I could do whatever I want to do. We will get as creative as we want to do. I want to be. And so that's a great fit for Cam. The question I have for Cam and New England is, we've never seen New England win football games with the style of offense they are going to try and run with Cam, because the quarterback run is going to be a part of it. Yes, they did it one time with Jacoby Brissett when their defense gave up 0 points. Yeah, so, I mean, that's going to help. But is that defense going to pick shutouts week by week? And so we've never seen New England win games like that. I want to see that happen. And the second thing is, I think that Cam being there is going to help mask their greatest weakness. Now, their greatest weakness by far is their skill players. They are below average, and that's putting it kindly. So, you know, Cam being a runner is going to help, you know, those guys on the outside not have as much pressure on them. But at the end of the day, they will have to go make plays, and they will have to go be able to win football games throwing the football downfield. And so N'Keal Harry will have to step forward, and Sanu will have to stay healthy, and Marquise Lee will hopefully cross your fingers, be a healthy player for them. But I don't see New England as all of a sudden this, oh my goodness, third best team in the AFC. I just don't see that. I think they're farther than just a quarterback away. They were not a playoff team on Sunday morning. I do see them as a playoff contending football team now, and hopefully Cam is healthy for them.
ESPN's Dan Orlovsky with us here on 104.5 The Zone.
So what do you see as next, Dan, for the Titans offense? Is it Darrington Evans as an option in the pass game, where the Titans get the running back more involved in a way they couldn't do with Deion Lewis and can't do with Derrick Henry? Is it Adam Humphries in year two, healthy and doing more of what they brought him in to do? What do you expect Arthur Smith to turn to layer on top of what they did so well last year?
Yeah, I definitely think Humphries is going to have to be somebody that, you know, becomes what they thought he would be. And I know injuries were part of the story last year, but I'd say Humphries taking a step forward would be a big deal. You know what you've got with Brown, right? And so you feel incredibly comfortable about that, and you probably have a pretty good understanding of who Corey Davis is right now. And so I still continue to expect to see multiple tight ends be a part of their pass game. And, you know, when you become, it's play callers are almost like quarterbacks. A quarterback has a good season, and you know, I fall victim of this at times too. This is the next greatest thing to ever come to the NFL. This guy's the best player we've ever seen. And defensive coordinators start to study, and they get a whole off season of studying without the pressure to craft a game plan to win. And so, you know, how does Arthur Smith continue to evolve as a play caller will be the number one thing I look at, because you can make the case it's not broke, don't fix it. But that's the kind of sword that so many play callers fall on. I'm just going to do what I did last year. You can't. They know what you're going to be doing. So how does he constantly evolve and stay ahead of the game? Well, I think is more important than a single player stepping forward, because they've got all the pieces. And the great thing he did last year was put all those pieces in the right places and, quote-unquote, set them up for success. And now that everybody's had a year of film, and really half a season of film with Tannehill pulling the trigger with Arthur Smith as the play caller, he's got to evolve, and he's got to continue to adapt, and he's got to continue to be more creative than the next defense he's going to play. That is the greatest thing that I want to see moving forward for that offense.
Dan, we were all definitely premature in anointing the Browns as taking that next step forward last offseason. We have not heard a peep from the Browns offense this offseason, a group that should be much improved, and Stefanski's offensive system fits Mayfield's style better because of the heavy personnel and that play-action attack.
It's perfect. I mean, it's absolutely perfect. The scheme fit for Stefanski and Baker Mayfield. A couple things about Baker. If you watched Baker in college, now, the problem with the addition to the run-pass option when it comes to people who study numbers and whatnot is sometimes there's a gray area with what it is, is it an RPO or is it a play-action pass? If you watch Oklahoma's offense, a lot of it was play-action pass football. They have their RPOs, there's no question about it, but a lot of it is play-action pass football. But people pegged it as RPOs. When the Browns had their success, Baker's rookie year, it was run the football, play-action pass, and when I say it simplifies reads for quarterbacks, it's not a, hey, this quarterback's dumb and he doesn't know what he's looking at, so we have to do that. I just want to say it simplifies it that it allows guys to play really free. Their minds play very free because you don't have to become obsessed with what you're looking at pre-snap. Play-action passes are mostly when you snap your head around after your fake, you find this guy, then find that guy, and you just play very reactionary. And that's what they did in 2018 with Baker. And in 2019 with Baker, they just didn't do it. They just played drop-back football. And it made me furious all season. And sometimes quarterbacks are play-action passing quarterbacks. Peyton Manning is not. Peyton Manning, give him the keys. Tom Brady's not. At least for the great majority of his career, he's not. They just weren't where Baker is. 35 interceptions in Baker's first two seasons. 35, which is a lot. 29 of them are playing drop-back football with no play-action pass. That's just bad coaching. And so Stefanski comes from Minnesota where that's the backbone, Gary Kubiak, Mike Shanahan stuff. And so it's just a very, very good marriage. Baker plays much better. He's a top eight quarterback in almost every stat when he plays play-action football. And so that's a really big deal, and I think it's going to be very successful in Cleveland this season.
Well, it doesn't take long to go find examples of what you're talking about there in Cleveland from last year. Titans fans certainly remember week one and the win over Cleveland where – the secondary, Kevin Byard baited Baker into a turnover, and then once Cleveland got behind in games, he had to go to the drop back game because the defense no longer had to honor the play action, and that really got them in a rut quarterback wise.
Yeah, I mean, and that's why, you know, everyone, there's obviously great conversation around Baker Mayfield this year, and I just struggle because so many people talk about Baker Mayfield like it was healthy last year around him. Like the coach was really good, and they weren't the most penalized team in the history of the NFL. The offensive line was great. Like, there again, we got to be good around quarterbacks, and that's a big deal. And so, yes, the team was not – Baker needs to play better. Baker needs to value the football. That is the number one thing he needs to grow on. But – The play caller is a significant upgrade, and the health of the weakness of that team is the offensive line. That's much better this year. And so, yeah, I mean, people sometimes, and I do this as well, we forget that football is such a connected sport. It's so connected. I went on television last year, and I said, the Titans are a pass-first football team, and everyone thought I was nuts. And I said, watch their games. They come out and try to throw haymakers early in their pass game, and then they just pound you away with the run. Look at the playoff game. And so I think it's because it's so connected, we sometimes focus on a single aspect, and they matter. There's no question about it. But the teams that play, like, complementary, connected football to their identity are the ones that are the best, and Cleveland did not do that.
Dan, as part of your new gig with NFL Live and being a part of that daily show, you were going to continue doing a college football game on Saturday for ESPN or ABC. How important was it for you to continue that role with college football and being able to go on site and continue calling games?
Yeah, huge, huge. I mean, ESPN hasn't made their determination of Monday Night Football yet, and so that's still in the cards. And if that doesn't happen, I'm definitely going to be doing my college game. And, you know, first of all, live sports are amazing. And being able to do live sports and call live games, it's just irreplaceable. And it's really important with, obviously, the opportunity to continue to build and grow. I think that it forces you to study tape, you know, not watch tape, but study tape. And that's a really big deal for your development as an analyst. You get to talk to coaches and learn some stuff that you don't know, you know, learn some scheme stuff that you don't know and thought process of stuff that you don't know. And then it also, I see all of these kids that go into the pros. I've seen them. I've called their games before. I've studied them on tape. And so I just think it prepares me, you know, really well for when those guys become players in the NFL. And I could talk about them in a light that really I don't know if anybody else can because of that opportunity. So, and I also love college. I love getting on campus. I love, you know, the energy from the kids and the pageantry of, you know, college football. And so I'm fortunate to be able to be doing that. And if Monday Night Football doesn't happen, I'll definitely still be doing my college games.
Well, and with that, it opens up. You talked about the ability to watch these college quarterbacks before you're talking about them in the NFL. It also opens up the ability for you to cover the draft for ESPN and talk a lot about that. Is that something that you also enjoy doing and that gives you that opportunity when you're on campus watching some of these guys and being a part of maybe some future draft coverage with ESPN?
Oh, for sure. Because, you know, like, again, you've seen these guys in such a unique aspect. It's not just watching their tape. You know, I've sat and I've questioned them. I've talked to them. I've talked to their coaches more often than not. I've talked to the opposing coaches. Hey, man, you guys got to play Jake Fromm this week. You know, what's the challenge of playing a guy like Jake Fromm? Or, no, you guys, why is it so difficult to play against Burrow right now? And so you get these conversations that when draft time comes, you can really feel confident in your viewpoint. You can feel very confident in what you see and what you want to say. And sometimes, you know, what I think one of the aspects of what makes an analyst good, entertaining, impactful, valuable is you got to be willing to say stuff. You got to be willing to say stuff that maybe some other guys aren't willing to say. And I think that being in that college atmosphere allows you certainly allows me the confidence to say some stuff. And that's one of the reasons why I love doing it is because I can use all those variables to formulate my own opinion and not just say what everybody else is.
There are quarterbacks out there who traditionally at this time have guys together working. And they're more eager to do that maybe than usual, given that they didn't have a chance to be with them at team facilities. The league doesn't want them doing it. The PA doesn't want them doing it. I'm sure there are plenty who are doing it quietly. Russell Wilson's, you know, on film doing it with Antonio Brown. Tom Brady's, you know, taunting the league on social media with doing it. What's your thinking about guys who can't resist right now or even flaunting it?
Yeah, I preface what I'm about to say with I hope and pray that these guys have had very intense and serious conversations with everybody that is part of these workouts and going, guys, we are going to do these workouts, but we need to do all the things necessary to have these workouts. Meaning, when you're not here, we're wearing masks. Whether you think it's some, we're wearing masks, we're social distancing, you're quarantining, you're not going to live your life normally if you're going to be a part of these workouts. And I believe these workouts matter because X. And so, you know, you better be having those conversations, because if you're just going to do these workouts and not, it's reckless and it's disrespectful. Now, I think a big part of this is this, like, we as athletes, we, from a very early age, start crafting this mindset. And the reason, or one of the great reasons why athletes become successful and they become that 1% or less than, is because they crafted their mindset to believe they can. I can do anything. I can go outwork anybody. Nothing will stand in my way. No excuses are accepted. And so, a lot of times we have this mindset in every aspect of our life, not just football. And there's moments when sometimes we need to pull ourselves out of that mindset, you know, and I would say that this is probably one of them. But Tom Brady's looking at Drew Brees and the Saints and going, wait, they've been together for 14 years. I got to close the gap. Russell Wilson realizes, you know, he's not young anymore. You know, he's going to play for a long time. There's no question, but like, he's got a really good team. And so the opportunity is to strike, and I guarantee those guys are going to go, if we don't play well, if I don't play well, you're not going to make excuses for me. You're not going to justify it by, oh, they couldn't get together this offseason. You're just going to crush me. Or a lot of guys will say, if I don't play well, is the NFLPA going to pay my salary? No, I'm going to get cut. And so many guys only have so many years to play. And so I got, guys, I see both sides of it. I do, and I know optics of it don't look great. And the player in me gets it. I guess the person removed from football and maybe the parent goes, you better have had some very intense conversations before doing these workouts.
Dan, final thing for you. What is the process like of going through a Monday night football opportunity? Like, are you going into a booth and calling a game? Are you just basing it off of what you've done? Like, take us through how many times you've chatted about it. Like, what do you do as an individual that's trying to get a gig like that, a massive gig on a national platform?
Yeah, I haven't done any type of audition or anything like that. You know, I've got, you know, a couple of years of calling college football games and some pretty intense ones. So, you know, I think that's part of it. Obviously, the coronavirus aspect is changed some things in regards to it and whatnot. And so I haven't done anything. I haven't had any conversations with ESPN people. I just know that I'm part of the conversation and they haven't made their decision yet. And so there's some very, what happens with college football is obviously a part of that. But, I just do my best, and what ESPN tells me to go do or asks me to go be a part of, they're going to get my best punch. And so, obviously, it's the king of it all, and I feel like I would absolutely crush it. But that's out of my hands for right now. And so we'll kind of see as we get closer to the season what happens.
Well, we knew from the first time you joined us that you were going to crush it with analysis on any level that you chose to go in or go toward. So, hey, congrats on everything, man. It's well earned, and we appreciate you taking the time every time you do come on this show.
You got it, guys. Have a great weekend. I appreciate you guys. Enjoy the fourth, and thank you again.
Have fun at the racetrack there or wherever you're calling us from.
I'm in my car. Air conditioning.
We'll pick up the pace.
Thanks, Dan.
Later.
Has been our guest. He said he was shirtless, Ball. He just mowed the yard, and he got in his truck.
Quite
people
the visual.
Are blowing by him.
Really appealing to our female audience out there when Dan Orlovsky admits that he's doing an interview with a shirtless. And
our NASCAR audience.
After mowing the yard.
Listen to those revving engines. NASCAR.
How long ago, was it 3 years ago when he joined us for the first time or four? It all runs together. But he's been generous with his time on this show. And for whatever reason, he's always responded and said, yeah, absolutely, I'll join 180 whenever.
Yeah.
And he does it at the Super Bowl. He does it when we see him in person, but also by phone. And, Paul, I think you even pointed out the first time he joined us, you're like, man, he is far and away better than what I expected. Because the perception is he's the guy who ran out of the back of the end zone and didn't know where he was on the safety.
He's done a good job planting himself as an analyst who's gotten beyond that bad safety.
But he owns it.
He laughs about it. I think, too, he's following in the Trent Dilfer footsteps, and he didn't have Trent Dilfer's career even. But this idea that you had to have been a great player in order to be a great analyst is nonsense. The Minnesota Super Bowl is one where he did a big show segment with us, and then he did a big Periscope with me right before I then wound up with the early version of the coronavirus, except vomiting.